I am on the phone right now with Paul Ray, who is the author of Mounting Evidence, Why We Need a New Investigation into 9/11. That's right. This is a book about 9/11. Isn't that something? 10 years after the event, here's a book about 9/11. I want to welcome you and thank you for joining us here on Shift Shapers Pole Reversal Radio. Paul Ray, how are you doing tonight?
Oh, just great, and thanks so much for having me aboard. I'm really looking forward to being with you on KBBF.
And we are looking into some things that occurred on a really monstrous event 10 years ago. There have been a lot of controversies that have, I mean, if you go into the YouTubes, I mean, there's all sorts of things that have been produced film-wise and book-wise and article-wise about this event, which happened on September 11th, 2001. Now, generally, this subject has been kind of like in the dustbin of history, as far as like some commission got together and said, here's what happened, this is the official story, and anybody who contradicts that is got an aluminum foil hat, there's somebody who is, they believe in conspiracy theories. Now, counter to that, just about every year when I have looked at the books that Project Censored puts out of the most censored stories of the year, almost every year there's something in it that's been uncovered about the events of September 11th, 2001, or a piece of debunking that official story.
Yeah, Project Censored has really been with that all the way.
And that's where we first encountered each other, was at an event that was sponsored by Project Censored.
Right you are.
So let's actually first uncover what is the official story. What are we expected to believe that occurred on September 11th, 2001. I know there's a lot of, there can be a lot of detail in it, but in as good of a nutshell as you can produce, Paul, can you give it to us?
Oh, sure. The official story is generated by the Bush administration and the media and formalized by the 9/11 Commission is pretty familiar to us. It asks us to believe that 19 Muslim fanatics led by Osama bin Laden from Afghanistan hijacked 4 airliners and flew them surprisingly well, striking the Twin Towers and the Pentagon. And the hijackers were able to do this, the story tells us, because America was caught by surprise and its trillion-dollar air defenses were caught completely off guard. It also tells us that the towers came down because of airplane impacts plus the fires that ensued, and that the Pentagon was not adequately defended, thereby allowing the airliner to swoop down unchallenged.
Isn't that amazing? And there was one more thing that happened, wasn't there? There was a third building. Or actually,
yes.
if you count the Pentagon, the number of buildings that actually collapsed right into their footprint, there was a third building.
Yes, indeed. It's telling, I think, that WTC-7, the third building you're referring to, was a 47-story skyscraper that would have been the tallest building in 30 states. It was a steel-framed building that was not hit by a plane, and yet has rarely been covered since 9/11 itself. In other words, it was initially covered, or actually pre-covered, before it came down. Since then, there's just been a total media blackout on the fact that there was a third skyscraper came down.
And I beg your pardon, Paul Ray, author of Mounting Evidence, Why We Need a New Investigation into 9/11. I jumped in and added something that has been actually, I put something back in that has actually been taken out of the official story, haven't I?
Oh, indeed, you did. WTC-7 was not even mentioned in the official 700-page commission report. You can check it in the index. It just doesn't appear. No mention whatsoever, even though, I mean, this is not an everyday event for a 47-story building to drop down.
So I'm going to recap the story, the official story, as I'm hearing it from you, that this conspiracy, no matter how you look at it, whether you think there are people who say, oh, it was an inside job, and then there are people who say it was this gang of Muslim terrorists. Either way, there was a conspiracy that was successfully pulled off where these hijackers flew airplanes into the World Trade Center building, two of the World Trade Center buildings, and the Pentagon.
And the amazing thing is that many of the alleged hijackers were not actually religious fanatics. Their leader, for instance, Muhammad Atta, led a life of booze, cocaine, and lap dancers. A few points in the story that I just narrated. Okay, then we have Osama bin Laden, supposedly the guy leading the operation from Afghanistan was never charged with 9/11, and in 2005 the FBI dropped him from its most wanted list. The alleged hijackers actually did not fly the planes very well. Planes that hit the towers almost collided with others, and the one that hit the Pentagon entered over eastern Virginia for 15 minutes. And then as far as the air defenses go, you really can't say America was caught by surprise, since Washington had received many, many warnings from other countries, not to mention from the CIA, the NSA, and the FBI. And then the air defenders that supposedly were caught completely off guard, I mean, they had bases in New York and Washington that already had fighters in the air, but failed to deploy them promptly. Then finally, the Twin Towers generated yellow, hot, molten steel at about 3,000-plus degrees, something that, other than jet fuel and office furniture, had to have produced such extreme high temperatures.
Is it illegal to talk about what we're talking about?
It almost could be under the National Security Acts that have gone through recently, including the one that Obama signed in December.
Because one of the things that I want to ask you about, Paul, is what has happened since September 11th, 2001, as far as national security and as far as laws that impinge upon free speech and impinge upon our legal rights that have gone into effect since September 11th, 2001, that in your opinion would not have happened if it hadn't been for some kind of major monstrous event causing fear in the hearts of the American public?
Well, again, I'll try to just sketch some of the highlights, or should I say lowlights. The first thing was the war on terror, which Bush declared just a very few days after 9/11. And this was the global war on terror that was open-ended, called for preventative strikes. And Bush, of course, immediately used it to justify the attacks on Afghanistan and a year later on Iraq. And ironically, both wars had been planned in some detail before 9/11.
Right.
So that's one piece. In other words, the war on terror as a justification for militarism and demonization of Arabs and Muslim countries.
Right, demonization of Arabs and other countries.
Yeah, big time. And then, of course, the demonization has gone on within this country. We've seen so many reports in recent weeks of the FBI and the New York Police Department hanging out in mosques and trailing any Muslims they could spot and this kind of thing.
Right, so it's a general anti-Muslim kind of atmosphere.
Yes, very definitely. And then the other two pieces of this kind of repression involved the USA Patriot Act, which was a response to 9/11, which dramatically reduced both the daily freedoms of the American public and also any restrictions on law enforcement agencies' gathering of intelligence within the country. So this was signed by Bush in 2001, 6 weeks after 9/11, and then again in 2011, Obama extended several of its key provisions, such as domestic wiretaps and checks of citizens' library records. And the original act could be passed quickly because its key provisions were already drawn up before 9/11. Finally, the Homeland Security Act was passed in 2002, and, of course, it authorized all of the airport measures supposedly related to preventing domestic terrorism, removal of shoes, banning liquids, x-ray booths, strip searches, red and orange alerts, and all the rest we have to put up with.
Now, do you think that people, and we'll get back to the book and everything, too, and how you're covering things, but do you think, given all of those, really, to my mind, that are assaults on our liberties, really, and certainly impingements on the various elements of the Bill of Rights, that people still remember 9/11 when these things happen, or have we just gotten used to this trend that started 10 years ago of we do not have rights that we thought we did, that we don't deserve to have them because we're so in danger?
Yeah, I think 9/11 is the catastrophe or trauma of choice when people start to question all of these losses of constitutional liberties. Then people kind of haul out 9/11 and say, well, we've got to prevent that from happening again and so forth. And that seems somehow in the minds of many to justify all of this domestic repression.
Right.
But on the other hand, I think you really are quite right in suggesting that we see the kind of boiling frog syndrome here. This is where you throw a frog into boiling water and it immediately will jump out and do something and react. But on the other hand, you put a frog in a bowl of water and bring it slowly to a boil, and the frog will just stay in there and be boiled to death. And I think that gradualism is one of the things that is most insidious about this whole trend.
Yes, right. Now, getting back to the book itself, and the book is Mounting Evidence, Why We Need a New Investigation into 9/11, and I'm talking to the author, Paul W. Ray, Ph.D., and I want to get back to the work that you did on this book, because I'm looking at, and I have read here before this interview, folks, people listening, just so you know, no, it's about 500 pages, and
yes,
it's amply indexed. You have a section in there that is devoted to what happened when, I think it was instigated by the widows, the 9/11 widows.
Mm-hmm.
They wanted
That's
to get
fair.
Down to what the true facts are on this. They had a lot of questions. What's this stuff about the molten metal? What is this stuff about the military being stood down? Why did I lose my loved one? And so they started just to make those people be quiet, or you can frame it how the reality has revealed itself to you. But there's a lot of content here on what was put in and left out of the commission report, the 9/11 commission. What can you tell
right.
us about it?
Yeah, well, I think you put your finger on one key piece, and that is the 9/11 widows, sometimes called the Jersey girls, because most of them lived in New Jersey, and other family members who had suffered these terrible losses were seeking answers, as we all do when we lose a loved one. And I think they had some credibility because they were victims, and so they were able to generate some interest in Congress. And then, as the book shows, right from the start, there's an attempt to subvert or marginalize any real examination of what went on. And this was very, very obvious right from the get-go when Philip Zelikow, who was very chummy with Condi Rice, was chosen basically to run the show, to run the commission. And then
yes.
Former Governor Tom Keene and former Representative Lee Hamilton, both who had very compromised conflict of interest written records, were appointed to the co-chairs. He is adequately covered in the book. It was just an amazing con artist, really. I mean, if you can imagine someone in charge of a blue ribbon investigation like this, who basically, before the commission ever met, before a shard of evidence had been brought in, had already written an outline for the report and already come to the conclusions that there was no involvement by the CIA and all the rest.
In other words, the official story was pre-written, and everything that the commission did was going to be an effort to make sure that they stuck to that story, and that no evidence would be allowed that wouldn't stick to the story.
Exactly, and occasionally it did creep in, and the most notable example would be when Secretary of Transportation Norman Mineta narrated a little incident that occurred in the bunker with Cheney that morning, and basically he said, well, a guy burst in and said, Mr. Vice President, there's a plane incoming at 50 miles out. Then he came back, Mr. Vice President, there's one at 20 miles out. And finally he told Cheney, hey, we got a plane 10 miles out here. Does the order still hold? Now, Mineta thought that Cheney had ordered the plane shot down, but when you look at the context, it's clear that the order from Cheney had been not to shoot the plane down, allow it to come in. And the commissioners, it's amazing to see them on tape. They just acted like somebody had said something totally obscene, and they tried to twist it around a little bit and cover for Mineta, and then they airbrushed him totally out of the final report, deleted his testimony, and even got rid of the videotape record of it. So clearly, Secretary Mineta had said something he wasn't supposed to.
Now, these proceedings were videotaped then?
They were, yes.
And there are some still existing versions of the videotape.
Yeah, we do have it, but as far as the official record that the commission deposited with the National Archives and so forth, these deletions I mentioned certainly were very evident.
Okay, and as part of putting your book together, this was some of the research that you did, was going through and seeing these video records of the proceedings. And also there were people who, they were heroes. They were the FDNY, right? They're heroes. They're superstars. They went in there and died for us. And here they are being purged out of the record because they saw things and they heard things. Can you tell us a little about that?
Sure. We have over 100 firefighter testimonies that were gathered just a few days after the tragedy. And many of them spoke very candidly into the mic because they didn't know exactly what the official story would become.
Right.
And so they told it as they experienced it. And they talked about hearing a lot of boom, 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 explosions. And some talked about explosions before the tower started to come down. Others talked about flashes going in a line around the buildings and so forth. And, you know, firefighters are not demolition experts, but what they reported sounded an awful lot like the characteristics of planned demolition. This, of course, was not at all welcome by the 9/11 Commission, which was going to stick with the thesis that the buildings came down strictly because of plane impacts and fires. Here you had national heroes, as you say, firefighters and also a lot of police who gave the testimony, but these testimonials were suppressed for 4 years by the city of New York, and finally the New York Times pried them out in 2005.
And so the official story is that, now that's very interesting about that there are the signs of demolition, because, I mean, here you're looking at the tallest buildings. When they were built, they were the tallest buildings in the world, and here they are coming down in the matter of a couple of seconds. And the story that's being told, that these planes went in, impacted some, I don't know, 30 floors from the top or something. I don't remember what the floors are, but you got the numbers on it.
Yeah, they impacted at different levels, but and we could say, I think, about 25 and 15 from the top. Yeah.
And there was an explosion of basically kerosene, which is really what jet fuel is.
That's
a great big burst of yellow kerosene fire.
Mm-hmm.
And then somehow that the impact and this kerosene had caused it a hot enough fire inside the building to cause the metal girders and the rivets and bolts that hold everything together to soften.
Right.
And begin like a pan, one level hits another one and they're all softened. And then by the time they get to the ones that are not burning, the weight is so great that they just start coming down anyway.
Right.
Without stopping,
though. This was the thesis from FEMA, the Federal Emergency Management Agency that did the initial study. Yeah, the pancake theory has a number of flaws, but most notably, when you looked at the pile of wreckage, there were no pancakes there. So if the buildings had pancaked, you would see a stack of floors. But it was all just totally chaotic and twisted metal.
There's nothing but dust.
You know, this kind of thing. So the forensic evidence in the pile did not match the theory.
And the melted ends of the girders, you know, there are two things that are really of interest to me. One is that the official story is so elaborate. I mean, the events were so elaborate, and the official story about them is so elaborate, and the steps taken to keep that story intact are so elaborate.
Yeah.
It's kind of mind-boggling in itself. Plus, when you start looking at some of the very convincing pieces of evidence that come out in spite of the suppression of evidence, of steel girders that have been cut, and things that have been found in the wreckage to indicate an explosive device, and then all of those eyewitness testimonies of the explosions and bombing. So you have some things that have kind of slipped in over the years into that kind of like are having a pancake effect on the narrative, let's say.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, you know, particularly the molten metal, I mean, because you don't break the laws of physics. To melt structural steel, you have to get to 2,700 degrees, and yet kerosene and office material, hydrocarbon fires of that sort, peak out at the max at 1,800. So you're 900 degrees short of melting the steel, and yet melted steel was pouring out of the South Tower.
Right, and you can see it in some videos.
You know, there's just a disconnect in the temperatures here, and somehow you have to account for those additional 900-plus degrees that that metal must have encountered in order to melt.
And you also see in the collapsing buildings, you see this very wide, very extremely strong girder material, the steel girder pieces,
right,
flying out of the building in pieces, like hundreds of feet away from the building as it's coming down. And you'd think, well, if it's pancaking and there's just a big crash, bang, 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 one on top of another, like dominoes, it would sound different. And that, how can you have little pieces of girder flying out?
That's a great question, and amazing how those terrible videotapes that we've seen more times than we'd like to imagine very clearly show explosions at the top. I mean, those collapses, if we can use that term, the fall of the buildings began with some very explosive kind of mushrooming or cauliflowering at the top, and as you say, the lateral propulsion of huge girders up to 400 or 500 feet has to be explained. Where did that energy come from?
It seems as though the more that comes out about that fractures and, you know, tears away at the official story, nobody seems to mind that this evidence keeps coming out. It's like nobody's rushing in there to say, ha, you're under arrest for saying this or cannot possibly be true, go away. It's like nobody seems to mind that this stuff is coming out, because evidently what matters is that the event happened and two wars have started and some changes have been made to our constitutional rights and our rule of law in the country.
I'm afraid you're all too right about that. But on the other hand, if people would stop and look at the inception of the war on terror, the inception of the Patriot Act, and all the rest, they would realize that debunking that story would then definitely call into question whether the things that were done on the basis of that story, namely the war on terror and such, would also have to be called into question. It would be a great way to end both the aggression abroad and the repression at home.
Well, I'm talking right now. We're on Shift Shapers Pole Reversal Radio, and I'm talking to Paul W. Ray, Ph.D., and we're talking about his book, Mounting Evidence, Why We Need a New Investigation into 9/11. And I think we're starting to move toward that question that's on the cover of your book. Like, why do we need, and maybe we just asked, I just asked you because information and evidence keeps coming out that fractures the story, and no one seems to, it doesn't seem to change anything. You're calling for an investigation, a real one.
Well, I'd sure love to see that. And immediately the question arises, well, how would we assemble a panel of fair-minded men and women who could be trusted to deal with the evidence with real integrity in a way that the 9/11 Commission clearly did not? And that's difficult to imagine. Would it be partially foreigners, partially Americans? Would it be people with legal or jurisprudence backgrounds? Or how would we pull together such a commission, and then who would pay for it? These are really tough questions that no one seems to have answers to.
Right. Now, what's interesting to me is, and you have some of these examples in your book, like, for instance, that there was a Warren Commission that was set up to tell the official story about the assassination of John Fitzgerald Kennedy, President Kennedy, in 1963.
Right.
To have the story be that there was this crazed lone gunman who did it all by himself. And 15 years later, I think it was about that long later, there was a congressional committee that actually did an investigation of their own came to the conclusion that, no, that's not how it happened. It was a conspiracy.
Right.
So things can change.
Yes, I think they can. And that was a unique period in the 70s with the Church Commission investigations into the CIA. And there was a lot of candor at that time following the shock of Watergate. And people realized, well, maybe government has gotten out of control here and we need to look into what's been going on, whether with Kennedy, Nixon, the CIA. But I'm afraid that that historic moment is not with us right now. And but maybe it could come out of the Occupy movement or whatever.
And I'm not actually going to. I'm just being skeptical about the story that's being told about 9/11, and I'm not necessarily going to that it was an inside job. It's that there are pieces. It has pieces to it where it looks like there are people who knew something that aren't really saying so. And so there's how do you explain that? We don't know, right? So I can't just like jump there, but. There's all these little pieces, and you know, also nobody got disciplined or fired, or it's the people who are the whistleblowers that got disciplined or fired.
That is so true. Well, there's a long, long list of people who spoke out or tried to speak out, and boy, they were marginalized, shut down, or in some case subjected to gag orders.
And like, if it was known how, and it was really shown in an investigation how the armed forces, the Air Force or what have you, got stood down, how is it that this thing that hit the Pentagon was allowed to hit it?
Mm-hmm.
And I know that there's even some differences of opinion about whether it was even a passenger airplane.
Mm-hmm.
But that's actually not the focus of your book, really. You get into quite a bit of the physical evidence, but you're really going into some detail on the things that were covered up, left out of the official story, and some things that have just not been explained.
So many things. And, you know, as far as the Pentagon goes, I think there's been a lot of acrimonious quibbling about, well, what hit the Pentagon? Was it the airliner? Was it a Golden Hawk plane, a missile, whatever? When the real question is, how did anything possibly get through the formidable defenses around the world's largest military headquarters?
Right. Yeah. It's like these were a bunch of crazy Arabs that could do anything. They had the mojo.
Yeah. Well, they had some help.
You know, and that's what things start to point to. Yeah, you don't run into the Pentagon with a passenger plane and just get away with it. I mean, of course you get killed in a crash, but that's not what I mean. What I mean is get away with it all the way in until you actually hit your target. The Soviets would have tried it 40 years ago if they knew that it could be done.
well said. And particularly in this situation where that plane showed up on radar out of Dulles International 17 minutes before it hit the building. And it just meandered all around and gained altitude, lost altitude, went into a 270, steep, not a dive, but a descent. It was very badly flown, and there was a lot of time. So the question is, well, my God, how could a plane have just been meandering around for 17 minutes and not be intercepted?
And, you know, there's another piece to this that is not explored much, and it is sort of the dark underbelly of a lot of things that have been happening over the last 10 years. For instance, the crash of the economy, foreclosures. There's always some deep, dark shenanigans in the financial world. What you've been looking into and seeing is that there were some, well, there was some strange insider trading that happened before. And maybe even after, but certainly before the 9/11 incident. And what did that entail?
Right. Just to sketch that very briefly, in the 10 days before the attacks, stock exchanges in several cities registered unprecedented spikes in these put options, which means somebody's betting that a stock is going to go down. And these particularly...
Right. What do you know?
Came on people placing put options on American and United Airlines,
right.
The carriers whose jetliners would be commandeered on 9/11. So it really stretches credibility to assume that these spikes were coincidental and not the result of insider trading, meaning that somebody knew and decided that they were going to profit on the catastrophe rather than help to prevent it.
And somewhere, somebody got bucket loads of money. And the strange thing about that piece of it when I read it is that it's so difficult to track and reveal who that was or who was involved.
Well, particularly it is because the Securities and Exchange Commission did an investigation, but then it was seized by the FBI and has never been released. So typically there are records of stock transactions and we know who bought and sold what, but in this case, that's all been suppressed.
Well, they would have been on wanted posters out in the West if they'd been involved with any of this, then, wouldn't they?
Mm-hmm. They would, and there would be some pretty well-known names and faces.
Yes. Yeah, and none of them Osama bin Laden. So
no.
I think I'd like to, as we start to conclude here in the next few minutes, it's a great interview. I mean, there's a lot of things you can deny about the 9/11 experience and what's been told about it, but you can't deny that it is a rich subject as far as things to explore and discuss.
Definitely. There are so many angles. You can really specialize in this money trail aspect, and the follow the money is often a very good route. And that has been done looking at the funding of Al-Qaeda since the 1980s. In other words, for about 15 years before 9/11, you had the Saudis and the CIA and Pakistan's ISI and lots of folks in there bankrolling bin Laden and his boys.
And then gradually, he is the like an arch villain. And whenever they talk about, whenever Homeland Security was doing these red, orange, yellow alerts, somehow the picture of bin Laden would come up. And in any election campaign, it was, you know, are you for bin Laden or are you for me? The person who's going to save the country. He was kind of the bogeyman for a long time, but
very definitely.
He gradually faded.
He lost his charge, and he had to be replaced. And so now we have Ahmadinejad, with the pronunciation in Iran, as a new Saddam, a new Osama.
And they don't even have to say anymore that they were connected to 9/11. People are so used to the constant war now.
Right. Well, Cheney worked for years and years to try to link some of the pre-selected enemies of the U.S. with bin Laden, like Saddam. I mean, Saddam and bin Laden were totally opposites and hated each other. But nevertheless, Cheney kept writing that myth as part of the fear-mongering.
Well, we can definitely go on and on here, and
sure.
I'm sure we will at another time. I look forward to it as well.
Yeah, me too.
And what we're talking about here is the book, Mounting Evidence, Why We Need a New Investigation into 9/11, and who I'm talking with here is the author, Paul W. Ray. That's spelled R-E-A, by the way, Ph.D. And where can people find your book, Paul?
One place is the website, www.mountingevidence.org, org.com, or in the North Bay. I will be appearing on Saturday, the 21st of April, at the Copperfield store there in Petaluma from 1:30 to 3:30.
1:30 to 3:30, Copperfields, Petaluma, March 21st, Saturday.
That's right.
And will there be others speaking with
there,
you at that
there may. We're going to check with the store and see if the Mickey Huff of Project Censored might also sell some of their excellent books at the same time.
And definitely shout out to the Project Censored team for keeping this in the public discussion to the degree that they have. As well.
I certainly will. They're to be applauded in so many ways, and 9/11 is just one of many.
So, Paul Ray, thank you very much for joining us on Shift Shapers, Pole Reversal Radio. We will get together and talk about this again, and onward and upward toward an investigation into 9/11.
Thank you so very much, and look forward to hooking up with you soon.